Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness and mindset. Today's guests, as I mentioned at the very top of the episode, were two of my favorite people, Tim and Jacko from the School of Calisthenics. So this is their second appearance on the podcast. They were back on in November 5th, 2018, episode 188, Redefine Your Impossible with the School of Calisthenics. And this is a very nice follow-up to covering things from a very different angle. I'm not going to spend too long in this introduction. I am just going to let you know that is a very... I love this conversation. I have a full page of notes because we focus heavily on the mindset side of things today. The first 10 minutes, we talk a little bit about bodyweight training, about calisthenics, and the biggest misconceptions that people have when it comes to body composition and in the element of calisthenics and bodyweight training. But we did talk about that in a lot more detail in the first episode. So today is very much focused on the mindset side of things. Tim and Jacko both have incredible mindsets when it comes to how they approach their goal setting, how they approach life in general, and dealing with things like comparison syndrome, failure. And we dive and dig deep into those topics today. So even though, as I said, we talk about the misconceptions of bodyweight training, we also talk about the goal setting process of asking what inspires you and what you enjoy, how to learn to let go of things outside of your control, the superpower of patience, the biggest mindset barriers that hold people back. And probably my favorite question is the biggest thing that has influenced both of their lives over the past 2 years. So that's at the very end of today's episode. So I'm not going to say too much else on it. Two of my favorite people. I loved this conversation. I'm always so grateful anytime I get to catch up with them. I am currently coming through their human flag inside their online community. So it's something on my list. Just now with some of the races, etc., being cancelled, I'm going to be doing a little bit more work on that human flag, and I can't recommend their online community more. It's such a great setup, their workshops, their courses for anyone that is looking to develop any skill when it comes to calisthenics. So be sure to check that out. I'll link it in the show notes. So without further ado, here is today's podcast, Tim and Jacko on calisthenics, learning to let go and overcoming mindset barriers. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am delighted, and I mean ecstatic, to be catching up and chatting to two of my favorite people from across the pond, Tim and Jacko from the School of Calisthenics. This is actually their second appearance on the podcast. They were on, which I can't believe this when I searched it, episode 188, Redefine Your Impossible with the School of Calisthenics, back in November 5th, 2018. I cannot believe it was that long ago we did the episode. Tim and Jacko are the co-owners of the School of Calisthenics. Calisthenics is a form of bodyweight training with a focus on pushing and pulling movements with no added weight. And then today we're going to be jumping around between fitness, between bodyweight, between calisthenics, and covering a lot of the mindset side of things because it is one of my personally favorite things to talk about. And I'm looking forward to chatting it with, as I said, two of my favorite people from across the pond. Tim, Jacko, welcome back to the podcast.
Well, absolute pleasure. I love that intro. I feel very, very blessed to have a second opportunity to come on. We must have done it right the first time, Jacko.
Yeah, I can't believe, like you say, I can't believe it was 2018. Time flies when you're having fun, eh, Brian?
I couldn't believe it. I literally looked at that date and went, I cannot believe it was November 2018. Lads, for everybody listening, I'm going to link up in the description in the show notes links to the first episode. But tell everybody listening just a little bit. We know your kind of backstory. A lot of people are following you online from that first podcast in terms of my audience. But tell us, what have you been up to over the last few months?
Crikey, we've covered the lockdown period, so we are, yeah, it's been a lot of work sort of at home around sort of developing our online platform and, yeah, trying to, a big focus for us for the last few months has just been trying to help people to train at home, expose them to some calisthenics and what an effective training system it can be when you don't have access to a fully equipped gym. And that's really kind of been, yeah, that's pretty much what we've been up to, trying to make that lockdown a little bit more pleasurable for people by giving them an opportunity to learn how to do some cool stuff.
Have you found that people have kind of gravitated more towards the calisthenics and bodyweight stuff because of lockdown? Like, the reason I ask that is the high intensity, I've got HIIT versions of my program that are just bodyweight based and they kind of exploded in a positive way over the last few months. Have you found that people have gravitated more towards, even the people who were on the fence of, you know, doing a calisthenic or a bodyweight style program, have more people kind of came into your ecosystem over the last couple of months online because of lockdown and COVID?
Yeah, I think we've had a huge influx, to be fair. Probably something close to like 30,000 new accounts, like using our online platform, which is obviously like an incredible number. But it's one of those things where at times stuff forces you into making a change and having to do something. And actually, that was my introduction to calisthenics in itself. I finished playing professional rugby because I had a head injury that forced me to change what I was doing. And that I remember someone sent me a postcard that had a quote on it, a C.S. Lewis quote that said, "And there are far greater things ahead of us than those that we leave behind." And it was poignant at that time for me. But it's a similar thing for people where they might have absolutely loved the gym and they still want to train, but you're stuck at home and you can't get access to weights and stuff. Whether you like it or not, if you're going to go and train, you're going to then start to explore what is it like to use my body weight as my resistance, and all of the what we enjoy and the richness that comes out of exploring that, rather than just moving a barbell or kettlebell or something, some external weight that you have to, you have to think a little bit outside the box. You have to get creative and you have to do things differently, which not for everyone all the time that they enjoy that part of it, but for a lot of people, it brings a freshness to your training.
I've got two potential segues here because there's two things I want to talk about, but I'm going to pull it onto the training side first before I dive into the mindset. And I'm curious because you mentioned the introduction to body weight, and I know Jacko and Tim, both of you had kind of similar journeys in terms of you didn't go straight into the gym at, you know, age 14, 15, 16 and start doing calisthenics. You were doing other things and then transitioned in. I'm curious, would you have, and just to kind of phrase it in terms of the audience that are listening here, there a lot of them are people that lift weights, they run, they do lots of different fitness. Some people are doing calisthenics and body weight. What advice would you offer to somebody who is looking to start a more body weight based program to try and improve, say, their body composition to start? I know you take it from the holistic standpoint in terms of play and movement equals happiness, etc. But in terms of the body composition, what would you say, or like one or two tips for people that want to introduce it, what would you say to look at first or what to do first when it comes to incorporating a bodyweight program?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something I've been playing around with a bit during lockdown myself, and edging my training towards more like a hypertrophy block for probably the last sort of 3 months or so. The first thing to put out there is for people just to remember that bodyweight and calisthenics isn't for beginners. We can always find a more difficult progression or another way to provide a progressive overload, which is obviously the governing principle that we're looking for with any form of training, really, to continue to get that forward movement and to get better. We can always find ways to do that. So you can take anybody who thinks they're strong in the gym and put them into calisthenics, and we're going to find something which is going to be challenging. And then the second thing really is to remember that the principles of building or changing body composition or building muscle, whatever it might be that we're looking to do specifically, the same principles apply as you do with any other top form of training. Body weight is just a form of load which we're going to go and pull or push or move from one place to another, and it can be it's the same principles apply as if you're going to go and do this with a barbell, a dumbbell or a kettlebell. The benefit of calisthenics probably is that by default you're just doing compound movements. There's nothing really in calisthenics which is isolated, so it's quite an effective way to train. It's a more integrated approach in terms of coordinating and using the entire kinetic chain to move, because it is total body exercise. But if you're looking if you want to change body composition to lose weight, then we just need to go and do the same thing. We can put together bodyweight circuits or bodyweight training, minimal rest periods, ramp the volume up, keep some intensity in there with some more complex or harder type movements, and just go after it. And the same thing, if you wanted to go and build mass, then you just go and use the same principles that you're going to do with any hypertrophy training program. And we're going to need to balance out that intensity and volume relationship, and we need to get the reps in. And you want to go down some, I've been doing some work over the last sort of few months, which has been sort of 10 sets of 10. So just using gym and volume training on push-ups, pull-ups, dips, and the variations of to make those more challenging. So it's take what you know and then look at calisthenics and think, well, what's interesting for me in terms of where I want to train? What equipment have I got available? What do I enjoy doing? What strength do I want to develop? What type of adaptation am I looking for? And then start sticking what you do into that kind of type of training. It's not a radical change in many ways.
I have just one follow-up question on that for sure. What do either of you, Tim or Jack, or what do you think is the biggest misconception when it comes to calisthenics and bodyweight training? And I'll put it in the area of body composition, because you kind of touched on a few really valuable points there, in terms of what's the biggest misconception you both see, or either of you see, when it comes to using calisthenics or using your own body weight in order to change your body composition?
It's a difficult one, because there's a few. One of the classic ones is, like, Tim was talking there about sort of hypertrophy, and can you build muscle with just body weight? And the answer in short is sort of yes, as long as we're able to find a way to provide that progressive overload. And just as Tim had alluded to, there's always a way we can progress something without needing external load to make it harder. It's just that if you stay just doing, you know, rows, pull-ups, push-ups, and you don't look at some of the progressions towards, like, say, single arm push-ups, well, going from, once you can find normal push-ups easy, trying to explore different ways of increasing the load, i.e. going towards some single arm progressions, that might change, be looking at changing some body angles, that's going to get you that increase progressively of load that you need. It's just that rather than picking up a slightly more or slightly heavier dumbbell, we're just going to manipulate the training environment that we're in our body to provide that. So just because something, you know, as Tim said, it's not necessarily, doesn't mean just beginners. It's not like once you've got good at push-ups, you then jump on the bench press. If you want to go for something like harder, you know, what about if you went from a push-up into a really long-term goal, would be something like a planche, would be like that's where you'd be effectively the top of a push-up, but without having your feet even on the ground. And that, I guess that lets me segue into a little bit of something I wanted to add into that. The bit of the spice on top is going, find something and choose something. This is what we found ourselves from a mindset perspective that really motivates you, that really inspires you, that you see and you go, it might just be like, that looks cool. Like for me, it was like a human flag. It was like, is that even possible? What, is someone Photoshopped that? What is that? Like, that is insane. How is that happening? And then using that as your sort of inspiration, motivation to help you stay consistent with your training, which you'll know, Brian, is one of the most beneficial things that you can do to make progress, is we've got to be consistent. How you be consistent is quite difficult, but I find, certainly from a personal point of view, when I've got something, my eye on the prize of something that I really want to achieve, that gives me that motivation to stay consistent. The added benefit of calisthenics is it makes you work on more than just the strength. We have to have good body control. We have to have spatial awareness. We have to have good flexibility and mobility, which is a hot topic for people these days. Like we were aware that our current daily living, for a lot of us, leaves us in tight, restricted positions. And we want to work on, we want to be more flexible, we want to move better, but we also want to be strong. Well, you tick all those boxes when you're working towards a calisthenics goal, and you get that added sort of, it works as that carrot in front of you to keep you motivated and keep you consistent.
I think the big one for me, Brian, on that is that often from a male's perspective, they'll be worried about losing muscle mass because they'll have been sort of training using your standard kind of lifts in the gym, bench, rows, squats, deadlifts, whatever. And this is something I went through when I started my journey into calisthenics about 6-7 years ago. I kind of made a decision. I was in the back of mind from my male dysmorphia kind of voice having a chat to me going, look, you're going to lose all your gains if you do this. I was kind of that keen to give it a go that I just went all in for 3 months. And I said, I'm going to go 3 months, and if I don't like it or I don't like the way that I look, I know enough to get back what I might have lost. And I never went back. I've not done an upper body based straight or weight based workout for since then, say 6-7 years. And the reality is that your body is going to change when you do calisthenics, because you're going to look more like a gymnast than you are going to look like a bodybuilder by the virtue of us spending more time doing compound type movements rather than doing anything which is particularly isolated. But I'm much more confident and feel way better about the way that I look now, and then on top of that, what I can do with my body, than I ever did when I was kind of smashing out as much hypertrophy work as I could do on the bench press, trying to chase that mirage of being bigger and whatever that means.
That's such an interesting point. You mentioned something there, Tim, and I'm going to pull it back to Jacko then about goal setting, about weighing up the downside of, you know, and I think that's applicable for any goal you set for yourself. You ask, what's the potential downside of this new training program, this new diet, this new thing I'm going to do? And then you ask yourself, can you handle the downside? In your case, Tim, it sounds like if the calisthenics weren't working, you would go back to weight training. But you tried it, it worked amazingly well, and you stuck with it and continually progressed, you know, over the past several years as a result of it. And that brings it back in a perfect transition into the mindset side that I want to dive into. You have the philosophy of redefining your impossible. It was the title of our first episode. As I mentioned, I'll link it in the show notes for everybody to check back on at the end of today's episode. But when it comes to goal setting, and I want to get both of your perspectives on this, so we can start with Jacko and then potentially move on to Tim, if that's okay, whichever order you want to take it in. But what is your process for goal setting? And what I love about calisthenics, what I love about fitness in general, is the way you set goals in fitness, the way you set goals in bodybuilding, in ultra endurance events, in calisthenics, it transcends into all the areas of your life in terms of how you approach things. Can you talk through, each of you, what is your goal setting process and how you go about actually setting goals for yourself and what you recommend people do?
And just to sort of give a bit of context to the phrase redefine your impossible was one that I think Tim came up with after we literally ourselves were in the gym trying to do some of this stuff where no one else was, feeling a little bit stupid, but just sort of having a bit of a go because we wanted to try some of this stuff. And we literally said to each other, mate, this feels impossible. And that's, you know, it was born organically as that. It's not, and that's something that I think is, in that one phrase, people understand the philosophy that we're working to, but it's not something that we've tried to, it's not like we've tried to manufacture this thing that has caught on, if you like, from a mindset perspective. It's something that we've just literally experienced ourselves. And I guess that's been the whole of our journey. It was partly that, just sort of sharing what we've enjoyed and what we've learned along the way during this calisthenics journey that we're on.
We never had a 3-day off-site marketing away day, did we?
Hey, can you imagine what we'd have come up with if we'd have had that? We'd have come up with some corporate rubbish. But yeah, so goal setting, I sort of alluded to it a little bit before. I, you know, before we started the School of Calisthenics, we had another company called One Athlete where we were training Paralympic athletes. And we did a combination of like strength and conditioning as well as performance mindset work with them. And Tim led on the S&P and I led on the performance mindset side of things. And when we'd be, and I treat it very much the same as like, whether a professional athlete or whether we're or not, our process that we go through can still be the same. And I always encourage to start with like, what's the dream? And that was like, what's the thing that really inspires you, really motivates you? Like, aim high. So when I first saw a human flag, I genuinely thought that it might be photoshopped. In my head, I wasn't yet able to calibrate or believe, like, is that real, that person is doing it, let alone do I think I can do it? But there was enough of a little of a voice to be like, well, once you see someone do it, you go, it looks impossible, but if they can do it, like, why can't I? That's the sort of my perspective on something like that. And then we just work, we literally just like have that as the carrot in front of us. That's my like long-term goal dream, and just work it back from there. And then, you know, ultimately the nitty gritty comes down to understand when it's in just the context of like a human flag or a calisthenics movement that's being my goal, I've got to at some point break it down to the nitty gritty of like, what do I actually need to do today to be able to start working towards that? So I reverse engineer it and go, what's happening in the human flag? At first, it was like cracking kind of a tail light. And then we start to understand that there's this pushing and pulling mechanism. We're making a connection to the hip on the top side, all the sort of intricacies of that. But breaking it down in a way that then allows me, with my broken body from rugby, to be able to start a journey towards working up those constituent parts that make up my longer term goal before gradually piecing them all together.
What about you, Tim? What's your process when it comes to goal setting? Is it something similar or is it something different? And the reason I ask that is my process is different to Jacko's in the sense that I think success leaves clues. Anyone that reverse engineers from a bigger goal and then breaks it into smaller component parts is always going to have success. But I would ask something similar. I would always ask why I'm doing something multiple times until I got to the root of the problem or the root of the motivation. And it sounds like Jacko asked what inspires you, which is great advice, because that's going to give you motivation to get out and do the thing you want to do. Is your process, Tim, similar, or is it completely different?
Yeah, it is. It's changed over the years, actually. When we first started, it was very much around getting the big kind of calisthenics kingpins nailed down. So I wanted to handstand muscle up, human flag back lever. That was sort of like the main things. And as Jacko said, he's covered that process brilliantly that we went through in terms of just breaking it down and understanding what the component parts were and then rebuilding a movement until we got there. I'm fortunate now that I've been, over the years, those things are pretty much squared away and they're on tap when I want them. So you start then lifting your eyes up towards other things that you want to play with. And that's probably my ethos, really, is I do what I enjoy. I want training to be fun, and I love calisthenics, and I love the process of taking on something which feels a bit audacious. So a little bit of history for me at the moment, I'm trying to work towards a full planche. And if I get that, that's going to be pretty significant for me, given the fact that I started off the back of multiple shoulder dislocations and two reconstructive surgeries. I put a post up on Instagram over the weekend, I think it was, about doing like a straddle press to handstand. And I've never been a gymnast. I don't think I look like I'm a gymnast when I move. But I'm constantly just trying to kind of nudge that potential of what I can do forwards. And when you start in calisthenics, the first time I put my hand on the floor to do a handstand, and the first time I went into a human flag position, they're the same shapes I used to dislocate my shoulder in. And I remember saying to Jacko, I was like, literally, mate, I don't know if my shoulder is going to stay in the socket when I do this human flag attempt. So that's where I began.
We're lucky that we didn't know each other that long then. And I'd only just finished playing rugby. But I was still of the rugby mindset where I literally went, yeah, whatever, mate, get on there.
Typical sport mindset.
If it breaks, we'll just tape it up and we'll just carry on. Whereas if I'd have known about all his shoulder dislocations, the history of I would have been like, mate, well, let's do that. Like, let's go and do something real easy, because we don't want that. I don't want to be that popping out when we're in the middle of the gym. Luckily, we hadn't met that long, and I was still stupid enough to, otherwise, you know, the scorecards had never been born.
So I think that the process now has changed quite a bit, and I genuinely just follow what I want to do from an enjoyment perspective. Calisthenics for us is a lot about play. So I go after things that are audacious and are going to push me to go and learn something about calisthenics. And I've always used training as an personal experiment to understand the process better and understand my body better. And then I'll just switch up my phases based on where lifestyle is. So if I know that I'm in a particularly busy work block, then I'll probably go adjust my training to go and do something else. And the goal might just be to get work done. I'm not too worried about going after a specific movement. Whereas now I'm sort of like coming out of that phase and going edging towards more like, I'm going to just change my training program so I'm focusing on something a little bit more specific. But I'm quite flexible in my training these days. I'm not too sort of like rigid on fixing myself on something and then going, I'm going to go with this hell for leather and I'm not going to stop until I've finished it, because sometimes it feels to me like I want to just deviate and I'll go back to it and move away. And I'm not too hard line on my goal setting these days. And that, to be honest, comes from a place of being very comfortable where I am in terms of what I can do and how I move and my enjoyment of my training. Not comfortable is the wrong word. It's like I don't want to move forwards, but I'm happy. I'm happy with how I am and how I train.
If it was it last Christmas, we were doing we often do a podcast at the end of the year, beginning of the following year, talking about what goals we may have set and be looking ahead. And there was one, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, Tim, where you actually went, some of the goals that I'd set myself before were actually putting me under pressure. And I think it was a really good point that sometimes there can be that fine line between something, and this is where it comes down to like understanding ourselves. This is individual for each of the listeners. If you set yourself some quite inspiring motivational goal that actually becomes too daunting, that can be a bad thing. That can be a suffocating thing. That can actually be off-putting. And a little bit of self-awareness and a little bit of understanding of what you respond well to goes a very long way in terms of understanding the types of goals that I want to set for myself.
I think for me, it comes down to a little bit of training maturity as well. Of like, if I think about, so some of the stuff that you've done, Brian, or when the athletes that we're training, like you've got to be ready on a certain day on a given time to go and do this thing. Like I don't have that in my training. And that to the point that Jacko made, I had 1 year where I just refused to set any goals. I said, I'm not setting any. And if someone said to me now, where do you want to be in 5 years? Like, I'm not dogmatic about where I want to be because I like to leave things open for opportunity and to see where I go and what am I learning. And if I get a book and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go and try, I've just got Brad Schoenfeld's new hypertrophy book. And I'm going to like, I'll probably go and play around with that for a bit because I want to. And then, yeah, just, I don't know if that answers the question. So it makes me feel really like wishy-washy and people are going, oh, you need to set goals to him. But that's how I work. And I like the freedom to be able to do that. And I'll still go. And if you look at my training, like it's not that I'm not achieving things and moving forwards. I'm just like water.
I love it. It's one of my favorite quotes, the Bruce Lee quote. It was like, just be like water. You know, it has no shape, yeah. It has no form, and it goes where it needs to go. I think that's why it's so important to, you know, talk to people like you, Tim, talk to people like you, Jacko, who have similar or different processes from me and people listening, because there is no right or wrong way. It's about finding what's the best fit for you when it comes to your training, but also when it comes to your mindset and how to think. I want to pull it back definitely on the self-awareness thing, and I'm interested in, so I'm going to throw this one on to Jacko and then come to you, Tim, about the pressure side. And as someone that is very, very similar, probably closer to you, Jacko, in that sense, where because I've set those big goals for myself, and I, even though I work to be like you, Tim, to be more like water, my normal constitution is to set big goals, be hard on myself and work towards them. And that can lead to putting too much pressure on myself. And I know a lot of people are very similar that are listening. So I'm curious, Jacko, for you first, when it comes to the self-awareness, what was an example? Because you brought up, say, a goal you may have set for yourself that was putting on too much pressure. It might not have been a fitness goal, you know, and you can get into that if you want. But what was the kind of self-talk, or what was the dialogue you either had with yourself or loved ones or with Tim or with people around you in order to figure out that this goal I've set for myself is actually causing me too much pressure, I can't prioritize it right now, or it may not be the thing I truly want? What did that look like in terms of the kind of dialogue, either internally or externally, when it came to figuring out that self-awareness on that particular topic?
It's a really interesting one. And I think that to start with, the most important thing is that understanding for everyone, we are all different, and we're all different at different times as well. How I deal with pressure now is very different to how I probably dealt with pressure when I was playing professional rugby. One of the things that during one of my many injuries when I was playing rugby, I was actually struggling with pressure at times and wanted to understand the sort of sports psychology behind it. So during a period where I knew I was going to be off for 3 months because I'd broken my foot, I think, I signed up to a diploma in sports psychology to just purely to understand it more for myself. Didn't expect at the time that I would then actually use that to sort of help other people as well. But understanding where you're at the current time, being open, as Tim has been, to the fact that may change. Like, so for me personally, I would have started off very much with goals that, like the human flag was my first in terms of training for calisthenics. It ticked a number of boxes for me in terms of I needed to improve my shoulder range of motion overhead, so I had to do that to get a human flag. I needed to improve that stability, and I wanted to be able to do this thing because ultimately I just thought it was cool. That's where it sort of started, and you know that was right at that time. Whereas where I've come a long way in my own sort of personal journey of training and understanding my body and understanding how much my body has changed from a recovering from a head injury to that was from the back of for 13 years of basically playing an impact sport to now where I've had what 6-7 years now of playing non-impact sport and trying to completely almost reprogram my body to be able to move in these new ways and be less tight. And I don't need to be ready for impact anymore. And I've had to change my approach where there was a lot of things drilled into us from a mindset perspective. When you're playing a sport like rugby, that, as I said, that actually helped helped the school counselor to get started when I said to Tim, just get on with it, mate. You know, we can take your shoulder back up if it pops out. That sort of, which I now, you know, I think is a stupid sort of, but it was just, you know, it was how we were when we played rugby. There was never, you'd look around the change room and there was never a guy that wasn't carrying some sort of injury. Whereas we don't need to batter our bodies when we haven't got a specific game to play at the weekend. And so my mindset shifts now, my goal shifts now to more towards longevity. How do I want to be when I'm 40, 50, 60, 70 years old? I want to enjoy my life. I'm well aware from having seen loved ones lose their health that once our health is gone, everything else is out the window. So trying to prioritize health and knowing that when I move and I'm moving well and I'm able to enjoy my body, that ticks that box. But I'm aware enough that I still need some of those goals that put a little bit of that pressure on. Otherwise, I just get a bit bored and things get a bit stagnant for me. But there is that then just brings in this dynamic of trying to do things for longevity and then trying to do some stuff that's hard in your training, and just getting that balance right is something that I'm probably exploring still a lot myself. And I think that in terms of the self-talk and how you deal with these things, the more time we have to spend time reflecting on where we're at and just being honest with ourselves is probably my biggest advice. We're in a rush these days and we don't give ourselves in a rush to reach our goals. And ultimately that sort of saps us of the great satisfaction you get when you've worked really hard and did it for a very long time for a goal. And we don't have spare time because we just fill it these days. So if you have time, or you need to make time and carve out time to be able to reflect on not just your training, but just how you're feeling, how are you feeling towards these goals that you may have set yourself? How are you doing towards them? How do they need tweaking? You know, goal setting for me is the goal you set at the start. I go through that process, great. But the most important thing is how you are regularly revisiting that, reflecting on it, and then making changes as you go. I think one of the biggest things that people make a mistake is with the goal setting is we set a goal and we feel like if we tweak it or change it or move it, that's not success and that's failure. And we're so scared of failure that it stops us from actually reaching our true potential. And understanding with calisthenics, we've learned this along the way, like you fail hundreds, thousands of times trying to do some of these things. But when you've been through that process, you start to understand what it is that I need to do. Like you only know what right is when you know what wrong is. It's one of the great things about failure. It actually teaches you so much. And it's something that I would just encourage people to embrace rather than shy away from. And I think in terms of goal setting, that worry of failure, if I change my goal, stops us from actually being effective. Goal setting for me just starts with that first goal you set. The real crux, the real beauty of it comes out of when you start to hone and tweak it and mold it along the way as you reflect.
I love that process in terms of you're using failure as feedback. I'm going to throw it to you, Tim, because I'm curious as someone that used the analogy like water, and that's something that I strive for. So the reason that I'm getting so much value from both of you is I'm very similar to Jacko in the way that I would have a default constitution that would put a lot of pressure on myself, but I strive to be more go with the flow, and it's something that I work on continuously. Tim, is that something that you've always been like, or is that something that you've built over the years, or is it just the natural way that you are in terms of the way that your mindset is currently or has always been?
I think it's definitely been a process, and being self-employed for the last 12 years, trying to build a private business in performance sport, specific with Paralympics, which is extremely niche and not an easy place to be successful, have opportunity. It taught me a lot as just trying to find my way in strength and conditioning coach as a self-employed person from day one. I've never had an employed job as an S&C coach, so anyone in the field will know that's fairly rare. So an example would have been that I after the London Paralympics, I had a number of athletes that competed there. I set myself a goal. I wanted to be part of a Paralympic team. I wanted to go to a Games and be involved. And the next one, obviously, was going to be 2016 in Rio. That goal can sit there, but it became very much aware that I'm not in control of all of the variables which are going to mean whether I'm successful or not. So I've got to, all I can do is rock up every single day, and whatever it is, I'm going to do my best. And I'm just going to go and keep putting in work, and I'm going to over deliver, and I'm going to leave value on the table all the time. And I'm just going to keep working with that goal of making the right connections and doing the right work and trying to put yourself in the right positions to be successful. But ultimately, I might not have got selected, or somebody might be better than me on that for that occasion, and I might have missed out on the opportunity. But what I'm in control of is doing my best all the time, and the same applies to my training. So what happened at the end of that story was I managed to go to, I got shortlisted for an interview to do the core staff team for Paralympics GB, which was to run the holding camp strength and conditioning facility in Belo Horizonte. Group interview, so you rock up, you do your best, and you try and show how much value you could bring to the team. Got selected for that, and then about 6 months later I got a phone call from British Swimming, and they were looking to change their S&C structure, and then they offered me a position then, and Jacko was supporting with the one athletes at that point as well, so we both went on and took that role with British Swimming as a consultant to then go and lead the team into the Games. That was in January 2016. They then selected me to go into the Games village to support the competition venue, so I got like way more than I'd ever hoped I was going to get. An absolute career dream come true. But I could have not got selected, and I could have just not been. It's not many S&C coaches go to a Paralympic Games. We're kind of, our job is done by then. So to be in that position and then to get taken and get the opportunity and to experience a Paralympics village and everything that goes with it was just incredible. But I don't put that down to, if I had not done that, would it have been a failure? No, because I still would have put work in. I still would have done my best, and I still have learned something, and there would have been other opportunities that would still have come off the back of it. So I think that's probably my takeaway. And I learned as well that from a training perspective, I'm not so hard on myself, particularly with training. And I used to, when things got busy and I was trying to work hard and get athletes in and train as many hours as I could during the week and build a business which could support me and my wife. If I couldn't train, I used to beat myself up about it all the time. I used to hate it. And then I came to the realization, almost through a forced process of, I just didn't have the capacity to do it, that when I can train, I'll smash it and I'll go hard. But if all of a sudden, like nowadays, if we go, right, we've got an opportunity and we've got a product we're going to launch, we've got an opportunity to go and do a piece of work, and that kind of takes over the focus from what my training is, I don't beat myself up when my plans training isn't progressing. I'll just go and do something else which makes me feel good, probably less intensive in terms of the amount of time and focus it requires, but I still enjoy it. And then when I've got some freedom and some space back in my diary, I come back and I pick my plans up again. And I think my overall message is, I put the work in, I try and do everything to the best of my ability, but I'm kind to myself at the same time.
I think that's such great advice. It straight away jumps to mind. Like, there's a reason, and I've talked about this in solo episodes of the podcast, that I don't train for events and write books at the same time. I tried to do both at one stage, and you just, sometimes you don't have enough bandwidth, whether it's family, whether it's training, whether it's work commitments, and just letting go of that control and realizing and being okay with it is half of the battle. I want to stay with you for a second, Tim, just because I think there's a follow-up here. Like, I've been a long-time subscriber that, you know, look, setting up an environment for good things to happen, which is what you did with, you know, putting extra value on the table, showing up every day, grinding it out, and being the best that you could be. And I'm curious, because that mindset shift of nearly splitting things into, this is in my control and this isn't in my control. You know, if I get picked, great, but that's out of my control. But what is in my control is I can show up every day and make sure that I'm leaving value on the table, as you said. So I'm curious, Tim, and then we're going to go to you, Jacko, is what are the main barriers that you see when it comes to people's mindset, either in day-to-day walking life or when people come to you first for calisthenics, or it might be a completely different example. And the reason I think that works well as a kind of follow-up question is because one of the main barriers that I see is people not separating the things that are in their control and the things that aren't in their control, because there's a big difference there, and worrying about things that aren't in your control can make you absolutely miserable. So I'm curious, Tim, what are the biggest barriers you see when it comes to people's mindset?
A lack of patience. Easy. It's people don't want to stay the course. Like, the stuff that I had to do when I was coming up through as a strength and conditioning coach, like, it would have been enough to make you leave the industry. It was hard. Like, I've told Jacko about some of it before, and I look back and I'll talk about it quite emotively because it was difficult and I sacrificed a lot to get there. But I loved what I was doing. I knew the sorts of athletes I wanted to work with and the opportunities that I wanted to have to travel with international teams and that sort of stuff. And I just stuck at it and I just kept on going. And I'm like anybody else, I'm human and I'll question whether I'm doing the right thing and is this going anywhere and maybe I'm just not good enough and should sack it off. But we shouldn't shy away from those feelings. They are opportunities to take on board and recognize how I feel and then do something with it to then go and use that as a fuel to drive you forwards or to just build your own, as you said before, your own self-awareness. And calisthenics is the same. A lot of people want to come into it and they'll be like, oh, I'm going to get a handstand. And a handstand might take you 2 years to do. So, and then Jack always says this, like, we want this stuff to be hard deep down. You don't outwardly think that you do. You think you want to do a handstand tomorrow, but you want a process like that to be difficult because there's so much value that you learn from it. And when I can do a planche, I'll put myself in a fairly unique group of people who can do a full planche. And that'll be pretty cool. And I'll probably be one of a smaller group of people who've had shoulder reconstructions and can still do it. And you speak to people that are in calisthenics and gymnastics and they'll go, you know, planche is flipping hard. But it's a realistic thing for me now if I keep putting the work in. But I've just got to keep going. I've got to keep taking small steps forwards all the time. And I've got to keep working towards that goal and not be impatient and just go and look at something else shiny and go, do you know what, I'm going to go off and play over there for a little bit. Because spreading yourself like that just means that you risk never really achieving your potential. And one thing I've read David Epstein's Range this year, which I absolutely loved. It's a great book, and it's talking about how generalists triumph over specialism. Well, I think there's a trade-off there. There's a certain amount of, you've got to stay in the game long enough to specialize to get good at something. But the generalism approach goes, just be open to trying other things. And that kind of striking that balance is a little bit for me where that kind of trying to be like water and fluid around things comes from. I want to learn from as many things as I can, but I want to be good at something.
And what about you, Jacko, when it comes to, I'm going to definitely come back, Tim, on the book as well then, because I want to do a follow-up question on that, but I want to come to Jacko first. In Jacko, what's the biggest barrier you see when it comes to people's mindset? Is it something similar? I know Tim has quoted you there in the sense that people want it to be hard, which is such a great line. Do you see something similar, or do you have another take when it comes to the barrier that people have when it comes to their mindset?
I mean, I already touched on the fear of failure thing and not seeing failure as something that's rot, like something that's bad, rather than seeing it for what it actually can teach you. I remember when I was young, playing like young rugby, one of the coaches, we got hammered by someone, I can't remember, but I just remember, you know, like every now and again, and maybe like I was like 13, 14 or something, and someone says something to you, for some reason it sticks in your mind. But the coach said, if you haven't learned anything when you lose, you haven't lost by enough. And it just reminds me of that we'd have times where we'd win games and just celebrate and not actually spend time reflecting on how we can make sure that happens again. Whereas when you lose and when you fail at things, it's often a great drive and great opportunity to learn from that. And we should learn from when we do things well and win, you know, if you're doing a competitive sport, but I think that failure drives that more. So just to give that context to help with why we need to stop being so afraid of failure. But the other thing I did want to just add in was, like, this happens with training all the time. And the camp, just one thing to say is, like, every bit of advice me and Tim are giving you is because we live this and we struggle with these things ourselves at times. We're no magic people that don't struggle with any of this stuff we're talking about. But comparing ourselves to others, that is such a barrier to people, because we make these comparisons and it does nothing, often nothing good for us. And the problem comes with, it's always, in my view, an unfair comparison when we make these. We just have, no one is the same as us. We don't know the context of what that other person is doing, and how they're doing it and where they're doing it. But we make these comparisons that make us make poor decisions around, like, rushing what we're doing. Or Tim said they're like, going after something else that's shiny because you've seen someone else doing it and they look like they're doing better. So trying to get away from comparing ourselves to others, difficult thing to do, but it's one of the, that would be one big bit of advice I'd give to people when they're trying to address their mindset. And if they're not sure, I would question yourself, like, try to notice, when am I comparing myself to others, and how is that impacting my mindset? Is it impacting me negatively? Because most often it will.
I'm curious, I'm going to stick with you for a second, Jacko, because that comparison syndrome is something that I've talked about a lot on the podcast, just because I think I can't speak for everybody, but it's definitely something that I do. And I've got better over the years at kind of, you know, inoculations for that comparison syndrome. Jacko, what's your process for handling that when it comes up, when you see X person, Y person, or X thing, Y thing, that you're like, I want that, or I wish I had that, or whatever the comparison is? What's your kind of either process or kind of guide for navigating through it in terms of handling it with yourself? And I know self-awareness will come into this, but just I'm curious, because I know everyone has different processes for this. What does yours look like?
It looks like a challenging process, to be honest. Let's take Tim's planche example. Like, my shoulders are still super buggered and I'm a million miles away from doing a planche. And when it's not like I see his progress and that and go, oh, amazing, like I'm so glad that I can't do that. Like, there's no one, we don't have that. It's like, I'm super stoked for him, but there's a part of me that's like, man, I wish I could do that as well. Of course there is. But I think that what it comes down to for me to try and deal with that, and when when I deal with it best, is when I hone in on and remind myself and use that self-awareness, as you said, is going to come into it, of like, what am I about? What does life for Jacko like look like? What are my aims and my goals? What am I as a person actually about? And then that can start to drive my better decisions around not just the training I do, but everything I do. And I think that again comes down to something else. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but having time to sit back and reflect. I was, you know, talk about bad things happening and trying to take something good out of it. When I had my head injury in rugby, I had a period of, you know, 4 or 5 months where I was in limbo, not knowing whether how well I was going to recover and what was going to go on. But what it did do was it effectively gave me like this career break where you had a lot of time to think. And I did a lot of thinking. I wrote down a lot of lists and made a lot of, you know, comparisons of things I want, where did I want to go next? What things do I want to do? And, you know, I was ultimately, I didn't think it at the time, but that was a very lucky period for me in my life where at the age of 31, I was able to have time to really step back, reflect on where I had gone, what I was doing, where I wanted to go in the future. And I just don't think that we don't have that opportunity often, or we certainly don't carve out that time, because, you know, I think about my wife who's working full-time job and trying to do this, that, and everything under the sun outside of that. There's no, the time to basically go, stop, reflect, like, where are you going? What do you want to do? It's difficult to carve that out, but if we can, then I think it goes a long way to helping you with a whole host of like problems in terms of addressing our mindset.
Yeah, it's one of the major benefits I get from running. As much as I hate the actual process of running, it does force you to kind of reflect back. I'm going to bring it back to you, Tim, and I just have one final question for both of you. And Tim, you mentioned the book Range earlier, and this is a kind of a nice little segue into the last question I want to ask both of you. And I'll start with you, as I mentioned, Tim, is one of my favorite things about books is it obviously questions either some of your own belief systems, or it educates you on some new topic, or has a way of potentially impacting your life in a positive way. But I'm going to take a slightly different direction with this question, because I'm subscribed to the School of Calisthenics podcast. It's one of my favorite podcasts when I'm running. And I love just to throw it out there, a recent episode with Ben Shepherd was one of my favorites. Like, I watch goals on Sunday has been part of my Sunday routine for the last 10 years. I know he's not on it as often anymore, but I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait to listen to this episode. So a nice little segue into this question is, over the past, say, year and a half, 2 years, excluded, I'm taking myself out of this bracket just to avoid all awkwardness. What podcast conversation, Tim, has had the biggest impact on your life, or what was said? And you don't have to say, it doesn't have to be a favorite episode or best guest or anything along those lines, but what podcast or what conversation has had the biggest impact on your life specifically over the last 2 years or so?
That's a great question. I'm not going to go podcast, actually, because it'd be difficult. We record, as you know, you record so many of them, and it's hard then to pull out. Like, there's so many learnings from those, and they're kind of like real. What I find we get from the podcast is we get often a micro glimpses. There's so many like little things that I can take away. And so when we did one with Patrick McEwen about nasal breathing, that was a really useful one. We had Tony Riddle on him talking about barefoot, and they're often things that I'm sort of thinking about exploring, playing with, and they're really useful kind of little bits of like little segments that you can just take away, and they're quite easy to implement. The one that probably stands out is we've done quite a lot of work to push into the potential benefits of calisthenics for sports performance, and particularly around creating what we call bomb-proof shoulders. So from my own and Jacko's own stories of coming from a place of having pretty beaten up shoulders to doing calisthenics and now being able to do a human flag cold any day of the week. So we've done a lot of research around the literature, and I had a conversation with a physiotherapist called Dr. Ian Horsley, who's the leading shoulder specialist physiotherapist for the English Institute of Sport. So if you're an athlete in the high performance system and you've got a shoulder injury, you go and see Ian. And he's been someone, we're now creating a project with him, but he said something to me which was really sort of, I use it in a presentation all the time. And he said, look, there'll be people all over the country, athletes who have got shoulders that are beaten up. They've got tears, they've got instability issues. But the biggest number one thing, which is going to determine as to whether they get a shoulder injury or not, is the level of neuromuscular control. And that basically means, can we keep the head of the humerus in the socket? And for us, that's exactly what calisthenics does. We build that neuromuscular control, we build the strength through range, and we just do a better job. And it was of keeping up that shoulder in a stable and maintain the structure integrity. And you know, sometimes where you just go like, I'm not crazy. Like, this is somebody who's really respected in this field, who's given me an affirmation around what we're trying to do. And is, as I said, he's gone on to become a real supporter of ours, and we're working with him to create a resource around this specifically. But it was a real light bulb moment where you go, I had this thing I thought was going to be a something, but now we're starting to get some real weight behind it. And that's just that, I find that massively exciting, because I like innovation. I like being creative. I like forging into new areas where people necessarily haven't been before, and then creating something new and of value. And that's really was like a pivotal conversation with Ian and then Simon Spence, the head of the physiotherapy at the EIS, where the guy was like, yeah, this is something you can go and go and develop this. And we've now since then taken it out to the UK Strength and Conditioning Association, Scottish Rugby, the FA. We did a presentation for Altis and TAS, and that's my favorite part of what we do at the School of Calisthenics.
Love it. And what about you, Jacko?
Well, obviously, Brian, I'd have to say the podcast that we did with you last time, that was within the 2 year time frame.
Slipping Jacko a tinner under the table.
And well, speaking of affirmations, to let the listeners that me and Tim, we love an affirmation.
It's our love language, Brian.
And mine too. There we go. Perfect. We got it.
Yeah, I have got one thing sprung to mind straight away. And it was, we were on Freestyle Connection podcast, which is Carl Paoli over in America. He sort of originally did Gymnastics WOD, was sort of big in the early days of CrossFit and the gymnastics side of CrossFit. And his book is Freestyle Connection. Fantastic coach. And, you know, we're lucky enough to actually, we managed to end up becoming friends effectively. With him, but we were on his podcast, and he asked a great question. He asked us a good question, and then it was what he reflected back to us. And I can't remember exactly what the question was that he asked, but I remember what he said in return of whatever however we answered it. He was like, "What it sounds like you're saying is, you guys are using calisthenics as a vehicle to help people be happy." And I was like, Carlos, you have got that. That is genius. That is exactly what I've been trying to say. And you've just managed to summarize it in a sentence that, you know, we've enjoyed our journey in our training class so much. It's taught us so much. And ultimately, it's enriched our lives and made us happy. And we're trying to share that with as many people that want to join in on that journey and on that ride with us. And it's true that if you speak to those that train with us, use our training programs, part of our online community, like it makes them happy. And it's just a privilege, as I mean, the training does rather than necessarily just me. It's just a real privilege for us to be part of that journey of spreading some happiness around the vehicle of calisthenics is just what's driving it.
And that's so clear from what you do. For anyone that's listening to this podcast, if you're not subscribed to the podcast, to the School of Calisthenics podcast, if you're not on their Instagram page, because I get all your feeds, I'm like, it's the stories, the highlights of my day. I'm like, because you look, both of you look like you're having so much fun. And that philosophy of, you know, movement plus, you know, mixing in, building in the community, the online community, which you have, and everybody in that network and in that circle, like it's very clear that, as you said, you're using it as a vehicle to make people happier, which I absolutely love. Lads, as I said, our round two, which is technically I think our round three or four, because I've been on your podcast as well as the second appearance on my one, so this is technically like our part three, part four. But for everybody that's listening who may be new and haven't considered or haven't listened to episode 188, for those of you who haven't done that, go check that out after today's episode, because we're going to be done shortly. Can you tell everybody listening where is the best place for them to either reach out to you directly for the online community to learn more about calisthenics, and where you spend most of your time online, where the best place for people to search you out on is?
So website, schoolcalisthenics.com. You'll find everything from online workshops and workshops to what we call our virtual classroom, which is where those online memberships are for all the online programs. And then social, probably Instagram, as Brian mentioned, is probably the most accessible, or where we're active the greatest. And that's the greatest, as in the most. That's School Calisthenics. But we're School Calisthenics everywhere, YouTube, blah, 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 everywhere. So you just search School Calisthenics, you'll find us there. I'm not afraid of throwing an email out there. So if you want to email us directly, mine's David. Don't get confused. That's just my first name.
This is just to give context, literally before we went on the podcast, because I forget your name is David every time. And I asked Tim, because we're recording this on Skype and doing a three-way conversation, I'm like, Tim, what's Jacko's second name again? He's like, oh yeah, it's Jackson. It's David. And I'm like, yes, of course, I knew that. Because I remember when you sent me the first ever email and it came from David Jackson, I'm like, who the fuck is David Jackson? So sorry, I didn't mean to cut over, but that's a truth, like legit true story.
Right, sometimes people are like, email, I'll say, like, I'll send an email, blah blah blah, like it might be on Instagram, and they write a message going, hi David, because it's david@schoolcalisthenics.com. hi David, I was told to give you an email from Jacko on Instagram.
I'm not even surprised.
Depending on who it is, I'm a little bit naughty and I pretend that David is Jacko's PA.
Oh, amazing, amazing, lads. I love it. I could chat to you for hours. We will do a round three again in the future for sure, and because we can talk on nearly any topic when it comes to mindset, fitness, because there's so much overlap. Regardless of your training, for those listening, regardless of your favorite training methods, calisthenics, body weight is something that you can incorporate into whatever training you're doing, whether you're a bodybuilder, whether you're an ultramarathon runner, whether you're looking to just improve your composition, lose weight. There's something there for everybody. It's one of my favorite ways to train and incorporate some of the methods that you both of you teach. So thank you for all you do. Thank you for this conversation again, lads. Have a wicked day. And how do we end the podcast? How do you end your podcast? School is
class dismissed.
That's the one, lads. Thanks again.
Pleasure,
thank
mate.
You
So there you have it. That is Tim and Jacko on calisthenics, learning to let go and overcoming mindset barriers. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. As I said, two of my favorite people. I love Tim and Jacko. They are just the best. They're exactly, for those of you following them online, on YouTube, on podcast, on Instagram, they're exactly like they are online in person. They're just the best. So go check out their platforms. As always, if this is your first time listening, hit that subscribe button, hit that follow button for episodes coming each and every Monday. And I'll catch you all next week.